talk about this and a little bit more as well, we will bring in our next guest from the Connecticut Young Republicans, Ken Langille. Ken, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Great. How are you this morning? How are and also, how are things with Connecticut Young Republicans?
Great, great. Things are going well. We're getting ready to attend the Young Republican Leadership Conference, actually, from March 20th to March 23rd in Washington, D.C. So we're just putting our preparations together for that right now.
Nice, nice. Oh, man. I want to talk to you more about that. What is your role, again, with Connecticut Young Republicans?
So I was actually just reelected to my second two-year term as chairman of Connecticut Young Republicans. So I want to thank the membership and my board for doing such a great job, and I look forward to continuing our good work.
Well, obviously, I want to thank you for doing such a great job. Otherwise, you would not have been reelected for your second term. Congratulations, Ken.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so we were talking a little bit about these red flag laws. And does the Connecticut Young Republicans have a stance on this? You must have heard something about this. And
yes, well, certainly, we're very concerned. As we know, there's been a lot of attacks on Second Amendment issues within the last 10 years, and especially this red flag law expansion, which really gives people who don't have any sort of law enforcement training or any sort of legal training, a big say over the process.
Why should gun owners, and I mean we're talking the law-abiding gun owners, okay, the good guys, why should they be fearful of this new law?
Well, the major concerning proposal is that it now gives family members, medical professionals such as APRNs, physicians, therapists, the ability to initiate the process, which means they can essentially apply for one of these risk warrants, go to a judge, and convince the judge that, essentially your firearm should be taken away because you're a threat. Now, this is without any sort of law enforcement investigation, which under the current law, there has to be some sort of investigation initiated by law enforcement. There has to be two police officers who essentially sign on to the warrant before it's put in front of a judge. And those law enforcement officers have been trained in the ability to determine probable cause where a physician or an APRN or a family member doesn't necessarily have that sort of legal training.
Now, maybe not the legal training, but some adversaries would say, well, but if this is a trained psychiatric professional, you certainly don't want, even the good guys don't want the guns in the hands of someone who's got or may have the potential to have psychiatric issues.
Yes, absolutely. And that's, something we want to keep an eye on. But we also want to make sure that there's a balance struck between our citizens' Second Amendment rights and the public safeties and well-being.
What is their potential for misuse of this law? There could be people who are just having an argument and it gets a little, let's say handguns aren't even brought out, but other than the fact that the people who are arguing or having a domestic, let's say they own these weapons, but they're not brought out, they're not visible, they're still locked up. Couldn't one person say and fabricate a story and say, well, I was fearful. This person brought out his weapon, and even though that doesn't happen, I mean, you're basically taking someone at their word, right?
Yes, absolutely. And while a judge is making a determination, there's really a lack of due process that comes into this because essentially a judge is making a determination. You're not involved in that determination, and the police show up and say, hey, hand over your guns. And the earliest, you can have a hearing is within the 2 weeks, where essentially you would have to now go in front of the judge and the burden would be on you to prove I'm not a threat, yeah. where it should really be the other That's way right. around, where it should be on the party who's moving, as it often is in the legal system, to prove that, hey, this person's dangerous, where it really seems like it puts an unfair burden on the gun owner.
Yeah, it really does. Couldn't there be unintended consequences, though, for women in particular?
Yes, absolutely. Especially in a case where there's an abusive spouse, and the woman, you know, is a gun owner, and they can attempt to essentially accuse her of saying, "Hey, you know, she's made threats against me in a situation that's unfounded," and essentially disarm her for that yeah. 2 week period, which really. You know, would put her in a dangerous situation.
That's exactly how I was looking at it myself. When I read about this, I'm thinking there could be a woman who is a gun owner strictly for protection. You know, maybe she's vulnerable and she's in, you know, a situation that's not productive, that's not healthy, that's not safe. And with a spouse or a significant other, and he wants to remove her ownership of that weapon for other reasons, and he makes a false claim, and because of the red flag laws, they remove that weapon from her, and then he over that 2 week period can inflict harm upon her.
Exactly, without the requirement that there be any sort of investigation by law enforcement, you're really, you know, lowering that bar now.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of unintended consequences with this, and people need to be careful with it, because it could actually, you know, it could cause more damage than good. But again, you know, it's just more government overreach, right?
Absolutely, and it's funny that they put the burden of proof on the gun owner, and it's sort of framed as this lack of, you know, it really creates a lack of due process issue. But on the other end, you know, you typically have Democrats arguing for bail reform. And their big argument for that is we're jailing people without any sense of due process. And it really kind of shows you the doublespeak that comes out of their mouth when it comes to big government and citizens' rights.
Yeah. Yeah, couldn't agree more. All right, we got a couple more minutes left. What else is on the horizon here for Connecticut Young Republicans?
So we're heading to D.C. from March 20th to 23rd. We'll be actually taking a White House tour when we're down there, but we'll also be interacting with all the different young Republican organizations around the country. A big shift has happened in leadership in the organization lately, where actually the Northeast has really had a much bigger say in the national organization's business, and that's really helped our Connecticut organization build up and have a much bigger say in how resources are developed and used in the 2020 election.
Oh, really? No kidding. They don't look at you in the Northeast going, come on, are there really even Republicans in the Northeast?
No, certainly. And there is kind of that instance of people saying, you know, Northeast Republicans, is that really a thing? That's like a Texas Democrat.
Right.
But, you know, Northeast Republicans really, you know, while we tend to be fiscally conservative and, you know, maybe a little more socially moderate, there's plenty of people who sort of see it our way and see it as, okay, you know, we're pushing for fiscal reform. We're fighting our battles up here when we can.
Well, not only is a Northeast Republican maybe an oxymoron, but young and Republican can be an oxymoron. What do you do to recruit more young Republicans? I would imagine that, especially here in Connecticut, that's got to be quite challenging.
Yeah, certainly. And I always like to point out the other side has a little bit of an advantage, because they can walk into a classroom at Yale and walk out with 30 volunteers, where we're really kind of fighting an uphill battle. But we've found actually that, especially with candidates like Bernie Sanders, the moderates are getting much more active, and especially the moderates in the Republican Party who, you know, don't want these issues like Medicare for All, where it's going to really hinder the system, and especially in a state like Connecticut, which is, you know, Hartford's the insurance capital of the world. You're talking about a major loss of jobs and income for young people, older people, really everyone across the board.
Yeah, you think, I mean, Bernie has a solid base, and you're right, they are predominantly younger. Would people, are there misconceptions? Do you think there are more people, more young Republicans than meets the eye? Would people be surprised to hear that?
I think so, and sometimes it's even pointing out to people who might identify as, you know, maybe even a moderate Democrat, that they actually agree with us on more issues than they do the other side now. We've really seen the push on the Democrat side towards a much further left platform over the last few years, and we constantly see it up at the state legislature with the different laws they're proposing, and it's really helped us bring people to our cause.
But they're actually, I would imagine, though, is it difficult to recruit them, or do they still stay registered Democrats despite being moderate, or do they actually register as Republicans, even if they're soft Republicans? Are they still registering as Republicans?
Well, we've seen a big shift in the registration ever since President Trump even declared to run. There were people who were leaving the Republican Party because he was the candidate, but there was also a lot of people who came into the party who were either Democrats or unaffiliated or independents. So we've really seen a broad-based growth in our membership in terms of people who might be single-issue voters, such as Second Amendment, or economy voters, or people who just across the board sort of realize the overreach in government that the Democrats are really trying to push right now.
Yeah, they want to remove your liberty. How old does somebody have to be? What's the parameters to be a young Republican? Up to what year, what age?
So our current membership guidelines are 18 to 40, but but one thing that we've actually pushed and were able to pass at the convention this year was creating a junior young Republican associate member, where essentially anybody who's in high school or even you know, later in middle school, who wants to get involved in Republican politics. Right now, we really kind of found there's not a great place for them to go. So we've created this membership where, while they're not full members, they're not able to vote on issues, they are able to get involved with the organization and help us with issues like fundraising and door knocking. So we really want to bring those young Republicans in, those high school Republicans who are just starting to get involved in politics, and making sure we keep them involved in politics when they go off to go to college, pushing them to join college Republicans, and then also pushing them to get back involved in their community once they graduate with young Republicans.
That's important. All right, so my final question for you, then we got to let you go, is how? How would people, young Republicans, get in touch with you or get in touch with the organization if they want to get involved?
So the easiest way is through Facebook, Connecticut Young Republicans on Facebook. You can also contact the state party, and they'll put you in contact with us. But we've really done a big outreach the last few months. I've been pushing all over the state and really helping grow our organization, you know, especially with 2020 coming around. We need as many people as we can possibly get involved.
That's right. It's an election year. All right, Ken.
Exactly.
Much appreciated. Thanks for your time this morning. Always a pleasure.